Well, in a moment, Dr. Michael Sala joins us as we talk about Kennedy's last stand, galactic diplomacy, and some other incredible issues facing us up there in space. But let's check in with our science advisor, Robert Zimmerman, with the latest on the New Horizons mission as the clock gets closer, Robert.
It is, George. What's happening now, of course, is New Horizons is zooming in towards the planet. And the planet is rotating. It has a six-day rotation. And the area that we're going to see up close is rotating in view. And that includes the front end of the large black equator, almost hemisphere-large whale, and the heart-shaped object you've mentioned before, which is a brighter area that kind of straddles that and the in the northern hemisphere. And they'll get also some good pictures of the poles as well, and it's a polar cap and what it's made of. And so this is creeping closer. We have to be patient because the signal takes so long to get from there to here. So we won't even know if it's actually succeeded, George.
That's right.
Almost 5 hours after it actually happened.
What's exciting, though, is the technology to pinpoint, the mathematics that must be involved. Absolutely just staggering.
This is great engineering because, you know, you can't miss even by a slightest amount. When they fired their original rocket engines on Earth, even, and they had to get it really pretty close. If you have a slight error along the way, it accumulates with time. Now, they've done a whole bunch of course corrections along the way. They've even taken lots and lots of pictures of the system because they were worried about debris in the mini solar system that Pluto has of many of its five moons and other debris. They didn't want to hit anything. And that's still a minor risk because, you know, you can't see everything. It's pretty minor, but it nonetheless exists. And so, just keep your fingers crossed and we'll know in a couple of days. We'll know for sure if it worked by tomorrow.
We'll talk to you tomorrow, Rob.
All right.
Thank you.
Very good, George. Thank you.
Bob Zimmerman, just following through for us as our science advisor on the New Horizons mission. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Michael Sala with us. Dr. Sala is a pioneer in the development of exopolitics. He's the author of a number of books, including Exposing U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life and Exopolitics. He has a Ph.D. in government from the University of Queensland, Australia. He is the founder of the Exopolitics Institute, which happens to be a not-for-profit organization which looks at the political implications of extraterrestrial life. His latest work is Kennedy's Last Stand. Always a pleasure to have you on the program, Michael. Welcome back.
Thank you, George. Great to be back.
What's new with you? You've been so busy.
Well, this is a really good time to be doing exopolitics because really now this is when people, especially scientists and those in policymaking think tanks and government centers, are starting to think about what happens when we discover extraterrestrial life out there. So there are a lot of symposia, a lot of courses and programs being set up to work through the societal, the financial, the economic, cultural, and the political implications of discovering extraterrestrial life out there, so that even though the term exopolitics itself hasn't been used, it really is exopolitics coming of age, and that's just come because of the discovery of these exoplanets in different solar systems, and scientists now shifting their opinion away from the earlier view that there's no evidence that there is any kind of life out there in other parts of the galaxy, to now that it is inevitable that there is life out there. So let's start thinking about it and what happens when we discover them.
Oh, man, it's going to be exciting when it happens. And, Michael, in terms of the United States compared to other countries, I don't see our country as disclosing much. Probably will come from whistleblowers, but what other countries might be out there that may be a little more just giving in terms of information?
Well, you have countries doing various things in terms of information concerning UFOs, extraterrestrial life. A lot of the South American countries have been allowing reports of UFOs to be investigated by nonprofit organizations, and we're talking about reports that have been handed up to military agencies and the Air Force in various South American countries, have been very collaborative with private institutions, and that's very encouraging in terms of these UFO sightings. Then you have countries like the Russian Federation that has been leaking or been allowing government officials to come forward to say things. You have a former president and the current prime minister of Russia, Medvedev, who in December of 2012 actually came forward and said that there are extraterrestrials living amongst us. And even though he said it off the record, he was taped saying it.
That's right.
People were kind of trying to work out, well, was he joking? Was he serious? But certainly he's not the only Russian official to come forward. There was a Russian Republic president of one of the provinces, Illuminov. He was also the president of the World Chess Federation, and he came forward and he said that he had actually been taken on an extraterrestrial craft and basically shown a different part of our solar system on this craft. So you have these Russian politicians who are allowed to come forward and say things about extraterrestrial life, and they continue to serve.
Well, and sometimes these politicians do this tongue-in-cheek and make it sound humorous when they're really trying to get the information out, Michael, I think.
Well, you know, that's one of the ways in which you can get information out there. I mean, there's that very famous incident where President Obama was on Jimmy Kimmel Live, and he spoke about extraterrestrial life not allowing him to reveal the truth. And he said it tongue-in-cheek. But there was actually body language that Obama was exhibiting that showed that he was under really high stress. I mean, his breathing rate shot up to, like, I think it was around 40 breaths per minute after it was analyzed by, I believe it was Ben Hansen, a former FBI agent who analyzed his body language and said, well, this is not the body language of someone who's joking. This is the body language of someone who is under great stress, which signifies that what he said was not just a joke to be dismissed, but actually he was revealing in a kind of humorous way some truths that were deeply disturbing.
Michael, let's as we're going to get into a lot of your work here, but tell us a little bit about your latest book, Kennedy's Last Stand.
Well, that's a book that basically looks at the efforts President Kennedy undertook to try and get to the bottom of the UFO issue. President Kennedy, like every president since him, has always struggled to get access to classified files on UFOs. You know, this is something that Presidents Carter, President Clinton, President Obama himself, all of them in various ways have said, either directly themselves or through some of their chief advisors, that they tried to get access to these UFO files, but they were denied access. And here we have to distinguish between classified UFO files and unclassified files that were part of the Project Blue Book. There was a United States Brigadier General Bollander, who released a memo that was in 1969-1970, and the Bollander memo basically said that there was a separate reporting mechanism for classified UFO files. That is, UFO reports that had national security implications basically went down a separate track to UFO reports that had no national security implications. And so basically, Project Blue Book was UFO reports that had no national security implications, which is why there's really not that much in there that is kind of like really confirming extraterrestrial visitation. But the classified UFO files, those are the ones that actually has all of the really hot information about extraterrestrials visiting our world and advanced technologies that can revolutionize the energy sector and so forth. And this was something that President Kennedy tried to get access to, and there was a struggle, and he did various, he launched various initiatives over the under 3 years that he was in office to try and get access to the UFO files. And I believe that the last 10 days of his presidency, dating from November 12 up until November 22nd, that last 10 days was critical in terms of what President Kennedy had been trying to achieve, which was to get access. And I believe that in that 10 days, he was either going to get access or something terrible was going to happen.
Some people theorize that Marilyn Monroe was going to go public with this, that Kennedy may have whispered some secrets to her, and that that's a reason, too, that she might have been killed. What do you think of that?
Oh, well, definitely, yes. There is a famous CIA wiretap report that was taken just 2 days before Marilyn Monroe's death. And that wiretap report basically summarizes Monroe's disclosures to close friends about the things that she had been told by President Kennedy concerning UFOs, that Kennedy actually had told her that he had seen crashed UFO material and had actually seen an alien body. And Monroe, because she became estranged from both of the Kennedy brothers, Attorney General Robert Kennedy, she basically was going to go ahead with a tell-all press conference. And this is actually the subject of this document, this CIA wiretap document. And this document actually has been very controversial. It was something that was released in the 90s. People have contested its validity. But more recently, there have been people who have done document comparisons with other CIA reports and found that the document is actually consistent with a standard CIA kind of incident report. And so that basically shows that this wiretap document may very well be what people have claimed, which is an authentic CIA wiretap of Marilyn Monroe 2 days before her death, basically showing that the CIA were monitoring her efforts to basically go forward with a tell-all press conference. And I think that the CIA played a role in her death.
It's an amazing story. And you've hypothesized about those possibilities. Will it really ever become public, Michael, that this is what probably happened?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question, George. It's the kind of information releases we are witnessing today. WikiLeaks has very recently come forward again and releasing a lot of documents. And it seems that just more and more documents are emerging, are being released, they are being leaked to organizations like WikiLeaks. And this is kind of very telling. I think we are probably at the on the verge of some really major document releases, documents that cover all kinds of issues, all kinds of topics, and WikiLeaks, as well as, say, the Edward Snowden leaks. There are still many more NSA documents that haven't been kind of publicly released yet that Snowden handed over to people with The Guardian and other newspapers. So I think that there is a lot more to come, and I certainly would not at all be surprised that an organization like WikiLeaks can release a whole set of documents, not only allowing us to find the truth about what happened to President Kennedy, what happened to Marilyn Monroe, but also actually disclosing some of the information about extraterrestrials visiting our world, and that this has been covered up and there have been all sorts of secret government projects set up to respond to this visitation.
Michael, what drives you? Because you have been at this for years. You do not stop. You're one of the best out there for this. What drives you?
Well, that's a really interesting question, George. I think what drives me is my need to really understand what is it that creates conflict at an international level. You know, that was the area that I specialized in when I was teaching at university. That's when my research topic was on international conflict for my PhD. So going all the way back to the 1980s, late 1980s, I became fascinated with conflict, and I did field work in various conflict zones such as Sri Lanka, East Timor, Kosovo, Macedonia. And this was something that was very near and dear to my heart in terms of trying to make a better world by trying to find people who would work collaboratively to resolve these conflicts. And so when in 2001 I found out about extraterrestrial life being a reality, and that this was subject to a high-level government cover-up, I realized that this would actually explain a lot of international conflict. So basically I believe that it's really because I have a passion for things that can help make our world a better place, and I think that the truth about extraterrestrial life is going to make our world a much better place, a more peaceful place, harmonious and loving, and that's the kind of world I want to live in, and the kind of world I would like to bequeath to my children. And so that's definitely a very powerful driving factor.
Well, with Dr. Michael Sala, his website, of course, exopolitics.org, his latest work, Kennedy's Last Stand. Michael, tell me about the Space Resource Exploration and Utilization Act of this year, 2015. What is that?
Well, that is a really interesting bill that has been presented in the U.S. Congress. It was presented both in the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. And basically, it's an act that is designed to protect the rights of mining in space mining. And, you know, on the surface, it seems to be very strange because there is no current mission to mine space. And the earliest reports are, the earliest estimates are that sometime in the mid-2020s, there may be the resources available to launch missions to asteroids, and maybe later that would be followed by the moon, and then eventually maybe Mars. But that would all be kind of late 20s, early 30s. So we're talking at least 10 years or more before the first space vehicles can actually land on a asteroid and begin mining. So the obvious question here is, well, why now? Why would the U.S. Congress pass a bill to basically protect mining in space? One can say, well, companies need to invest considerable resources into any kind of space operations, and if they were to do space mining, that would be a considerable investment, and so they would want to protect that, and a mining bill would do that. But yet, there is something that was passed by the United Nations. It's a treaty. It's called the Outer Space Treaty in 1966. And basically, that protects the freedom of all nations to explore space and use its resources. And it's all recognized under international law. So space mining is actually protected under the 1966 Outer Space Treaty. So that explanation really doesn't hold water. And this is where it comes down to the possibility that, in fact, that this space mining bill actually has another purpose, which is to protect covert mining in space, which is occurring now and which is actually exploiting workers.
Let's talk about that, Michael, when we come back. So much more. I'm George Norrie, and we shall be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And Michael Sala with us here on Coast to Coast AM as we're talking about his works, Kennedy's Last Stand, Galactic Diplomacy, all about exopolitics and what may or may not have been covered up. Hey, we have a television program that you can watch, too, that is never covered up called Beyond Belief. And for 99 cents, you'll get a preview of every program you can look at for several weeks. So just go to this website, beyondbelief.com, and give it a try, beyondbelief.com. And welcome back. George Norrie with you with Dr. Michael Sala. Michael, tell us more about these thoughts of mining on some of these space objects. What's going on up there?
Well, this is one of the things that comes from that Space Resource Exploration Utilization Act that the House of Representatives is currently debating for or considering for its next session. It has some really interesting language in there in terms of space mining. It's basically, quote, discourage government barriers and, quote, free from harmful interference. And it's like, well, you know, exactly what does that mean? Well, discourage government barriers, you know, that's a kind of reference to preventing federal government regulations applying to space mining. So therefore, for example, whatever kind of federal protections that exist for workers, that would not be something that could be applied to space mining. Free from harmful interference, well, to me, that kind of suggests that there would be standards in terms of space that would not necessarily be something that would be subject to international review in terms of human rights organizations, international criminal courts, and so forth. If they wanted to investigate claims that labor was being misused in these space mines, then this kind of language would prevent that. And essentially, the goal of this act is to make any issue concerning space mining involving any U.S. corporation something that would not be resolved in an international organization like a United Nations Human Rights Committee or a International Criminal Court, but something that would be resolved in the U.S. District Court system. And you know, quite simply, if, for example, if the claims, if the allegations by some whistleblowers that there is actual space mining happening now, that it's not something that is being planned for 10, 20 years in the future, that it actually has been happening for decades now secretly, and that there have been abuses in these space mines or in these colonies where one of the functions is to mine the resources of those planets. And there has been reports about these abuses in space, and I think it's very interesting that this space mining initiative basically was submitted to the U.S. House of Representatives pretty much the same time as these claims came forward by a whistleblower who I know you are aware of, Corey Good, who says that he actually has traveled as part of an inspection tour to one of these space mining colonies and seen evidence of human rights abuses.
That's an amazing story, Michael. It really is.
It is an amazing story because what we have here is someone who is both a whistleblower and an experiencer. I mean, there are many people, many whistleblowers, as you know, who have come forward and said that they had experiences 10, 20, 30 years ago and that they now feel honor bound to come forward to reveal what had happened to them. Corey is a whistleblower in that regard because he does claim to have served for 20 years with secret space programs. But what sets him apart from other whistleblowers is that he is also currently an experiencer. That is, he is having direct contact experiences with a group of extraterrestrials who are facilitating a process whereby they are encouraging various players in these secret space programs to meet and discuss issues and to basically prepare humanity for the truth to be disclosed. And this group of visiting extraterrestrials that Corey refers to as the Sphere Being Alliance have appointed him to be their delegate at these meetings. And at these meetings, there were claims made about exploitation of workers, slave trade, and so forth at these secret space mining colonies. And so there was an offer made for an inspection tour to go to Mars to inspect one of the mining colonies. And so Corey wrote a report of that inspection tour that happened on June 20. So we're not talking that much time ago. I mean, it's like 3 weeks ago. He says that he went along with a lieutenant colonel who's also a member of one of the secret space programs and a delegate, that the two of them went together with the security team to a Mars colony and basically were given an inspection tour, and then they were going to extract a family from that colony who would then be debriefed about the conditions there. Well, it basically, cut a long story short, the commander of that Mars colony reneged on the prior agreement, tried to blackmail the family into being silent, and then when the Colonel Gonzalez protested, imprisoned him and Corey Good, who were then rescued by this Sphere Being Alliance. So it's an incredible story, and Corey has written a report about it, and you can find information there through the website. I wrote a report about his meeting, or you could also go to his website, I believe it's spherebeingalliance.com, and find his report about that meeting. But it is very interesting that that meeting happened in June, and this is, and basically only 5 days earlier is when the Space Resource and Exploration Utilization Act was actually passed through the Science, Technology and Space Committee of the House of Representatives and referred to the full House of Representatives for a vote. So it looks like it's going to get passed in the House, and the same thing is going to happen in the Senate. So this is all happening at the same time as Corey is reporting about these bases on Mars and elsewhere that are basically exploiting workers. So I thought that that was a really important synchronicity, that there is something happening here. It's not just Corey and another person who claim to be direct eyewitnesses of this kind of abuse happening in space, but you also have a very suspicious bill submitted to the Congress at the very time as these allegations are coming forward. So I think there's something there that needs to be kind of investigated.
And ironically, I'm going to be with Corey this weekend, Michael, in Denver, taping our Beyond Belief television program. So I'm looking forward to that. And your work with him has helped me a lot to prepare for it.
Oh, that's great. I'm so glad to hear that. I think he's really an amazing person, tremendous courage to come forward and reveal the things that he's been revealing. It's not an easy thing to be a whistleblower. It's certainly something that can be a tremendous risk to one's career and livelihood. And but Corey took that upon himself. He felt honor-bound to basically reveal the things that he has experienced, and he has suffered some severe repercussions in terms of his career, but he continues to release the information. So it's been a real honor working with him.
What is your take? In a few months, the Pope is going to meet with President Obama, speak to Congress, address the UN. There's something going on here, Michael. What do you think?
Definitely. I think this is really very, very significant. Firstly, I mean, this is not the first time the Pope has met with an American president or gone to the United Nations to address the General Assembly. But what makes this very interesting is that this Pope, it's his first time to the United States, and he has been very vocal in his support of Jesuit astronomers who have been discussing the implications of discovering extraterrestrial life. So Pope Francis has been encouraging them to basically say what they believe, and there have been a number of presentations given by these Jesuit astronomers. The one which is most interesting is Brother Guy Consolmagno, who in September of last year went to a meeting at the Library of Congress that was sponsored by NASA and gave a presentation about baptizing extraterrestrials, which, I mean, you have to really ask yourself, why would a Catholic theologian, astronomer, talk at the Library of Congress at an event sponsored by NASA about baptizing extraterrestrials? And so this is something that has the support of Pope Francis, and Pope Francis actually made a statement earlier this year, where he talked in euphemistic terms about extraterrestrials being part of God's great purpose or great plan. He referred to them as beings of the universe, and what he was doing there was basically saying it's okay for Catholics to believe in extraterrestrial life, that is consistent with Christian theology, and in fact, extraterrestrials can play a very positive role in the evolution of all life in the universe and can be a part of God's plan. So I think when you put all of these things together, what you're getting here is Pope Francis, with the support of his Jesuit astronomers, and Pope Francis himself is a Jesuit, that's something to keep in mind, he's the first Jesuit Pope. He is really laying the foundations here for an announcement about the discovery of extraterrestrial life. And so I think that, as we know, many exoplanets are being discovered. Astronomers around the world say it's only a matter of time. Plus, at the same time, we have the disclosure movement moving forward. More and more documents are coming forward, are being leaked. Whistleblowers are revealing what has happened to them. So the disclosure movement is also moving forward. You have President Obama making comments himself about wanting to talk about UFOs and extraterrestrials, but not being allowed to. His former counselor, John Podesta, has said that his biggest failure in 2014 was not getting to the bottom of the UFO issue. So when you put all these things together, I think what's going to happen when you have the world's most eminent religious leader meeting the most powerful political leader in Washington, D.C., I think the stage is set for a major announcement that, at the very least, I believe will concern the discovery of extraterrestrial life and may also basically lay the foundations or begin the ball rolling for some kind of disclosure of extraterrestrial life, which would be even more exciting because that would kind of vindicate the work I've been doing and your own work in terms of all these years having so many guests talk about the cover-up of extraterrestrial life. So if the Pope and the President kind of gave a nod to the disclosure movement while making some statement concerning the discovery of extraterrestrial life, I think that would be something really major, and I think that is something we may very well witness in September 23rd when they meet.
Michael, how blatant do you think, if an announcement comes, would be? Would it simply say, we have reason to believe that there are extraterrestrial life out there, intelligent extraterrestrial life, you know, way out there in other solar systems, or would they be a little more direct?
I think that they could very easily make a statement that we have discovered extraterrestrial life out there somewhere, whether it's some kind of SETI radio signal or whether it's some kind of biosignature from one of the space telescopes of some other world. But basically, I think that they could very easily make an announcement that they have discovered extraterrestrial life. And that wouldn't rock the boat too much, because they're not saying that we've been lying for 30, 40, 60 years or whatever about extraterrestrials visiting us. They wouldn't have to say anything about that. Basically, all they would need to say is that we've discovered signs or evidence of extraterrestrial life out there. And so let's start thinking about what that means for our society, our civilization, and whether, you know, then what the next step might be, whether it's establishing some kind of communications or radio signals or probes or whatever the response is. But I think they could very easily start the ball rolling in terms of announcing the discovery of extraterrestrial life and then going to the next step of establishing contact or admitting that there has been contact already made and starting to disclose the truth.
How do you think people would react to that kind of an announcement? Would they panic? Would they accept it? What do you think?
Well, there was a really significant poll by National Geographic a number of years ago. I believe it was around 2010. And the figures were very interesting. They surveyed just over 1,000 Americans, and basically what they found was that in terms of how would people respond to the discovery of extraterrestrial life, they found that 72% said that they would be excited and optimistic about the discovery of extraterrestrial life. And it was only a small minority, I recall it was around 5%, that said that they would be fearful or apprehensive about the discovery of extraterrestrial life. So and the others were undecided. So I think basically we're talking about three quarters or more of the population that would be excited by an announcement saying that we've discovered extraterrestrial life out there. And I think that that percentage would pretty much hold for any kind of disclosure that we actually know that extraterrestrials are visiting us now. I think it's always only ever been about the minority who are very challenged or would have their interests compromised in some way by this discovery. I think, you know, we're talking here about the 0.1% of the planet that have significant resources in kind of antiquated energy industries or pharmaceutical industries and so forth. Their interests would be severely threatened by any kind of acknowledgement that extraterrestrial life is visiting with superior energy resources and kind of healing modalities. So I think that, yes, there is a small percentage that would be very challenged, and that would actually also include some very kind of committed religious fundamentalist groups that really see extraterrestrial life as kind of being forms of demonic life. Unfortunately, that is a very pervasive aspect of quite a number of evangelical Christian groups that have had people talk about extraterrestrial life, so which is why I'm so pleased that someone like Pope Francis can actually take a proactive stance and say that no, extraterrestrials, there's nothing to be fearful here, that these beings are ethical and are capable of being baptized, and they could be our brothers.
And they're probably all looking for God. They're looking for that answer, Michael, aren't they?
Well, that's right. In this statement that Pope Francis released earlier this year, he basically said that all creation, the beings of the universe or extraterrestrials, as he kind of referred to them in that euphemistic way, that they're all looking for meaning and purpose in the grand scheme of things, that God moves in kind of like very mysterious ways through evolutionary processes, and that extraterrestrials, just like us, are trying to work out what God's plan is and making a decision as to whether they're going to be a part of that plan or actively oppose it.
It's going to be an exciting moment.
I think it's going to really transform the world. Even something as innocuous as them acknowledging extraterrestrial life exists in a distant star system, even that, even if it meant that they believed that it would be still decades before we actually made physical contact with them, I think that would actually transform people tremendously, because for the first time, people would now know we're not alone in the universe, that there's at least one other and probably millions of other different civilizations out there, and that we need to start really opening up our minds to what that entails.
Stay with us when we come back at the top of the hour. Dr. Michael Sala will take your phone calls as we continue chatting about galactic diplomacy, Kennedy's last stand, and exopolitics right here on Coast to Coast AM.